Hello everyone and welcome back to Free Kick, the official AFLW fantasy podcast. My name is Willow and today I am joined by Jono and Liam. I will start with specifically Jono. How are you going this week, Jono?
I've gone pretty well, thanks. Yeah, I think it's nice to be recovered from the sickness that, you know, kept me a bit down last week. So nice to be back on the up and feeling fit and firing.
Absolutely wonderful. And someone else who is back fit and firing this week is Liam, who had a much better round three. Liam, how are you going now that you can focus on your women's team, not your men's team?
I would like it known that I was definitely focusing on both with equal amounts, he says, potentially lying slightly. I'm pretty good. I'm definitely doing better than the Bombers' fourth quarter defense, which drove me to despair on Sunday night. I do love losing to other sides that are bad, but my side definitely improved over the weekend. Felt like I got some very solid trades and generally feel like I might actually be in with a shot of rising up the ranks in the next fortnight.
Very nice. And it was a good weekend for football overall. It was a good weekend because the three of us all managed to get it to a game together, which was rather exciting. We all went to the Collingwood Hawthorn game, which Jono, in particular, probably enjoyed the most of the three of us. Jono, did you enjoy the action at Vic Park?
Oh, I did. I think the first half was pretty frustrating. We really should have been further ahead, the Hawks. But, geez, once we got going, Onya McDonough is unstoppable. It's just nice to have quality players like Lucy Wales patrolling behind the ball. It was a good game.
It was quite an enjoyable game, nonetheless. We will use that as our very poor segue to go to our shipping report. And this week in the shipping report, there have been a few sailboats passing in the night, which is quite interesting. And we do usually start at the bottom, and that would be me and Mel. So we'll start with Mel. Bows down to me, scored a respectable 1884, a weekly rank of 3,240, which means that Mel's overall ranking sits at 3,325. My ranking this week went up a paltry 92, which was unfortunately actually the worst of the four of us, which is disappointing considering I actually gained rank, but I scored a 1917, a 2,083 overall for the week, and I'm just sitting on the cusp of the top 1,000, 1,065. So this week, my good call was basically not a call at all, which was just having Anne Hatchard. Very happy to hold on to her for a lovely 118. My bad call was holding on to my Richmond forwards. I thought that they would go well against a Bombers team that can't defend in the fourth quarter, and that turned out to be true, but the Bombers just can't actually defend tall forwards, apparently. They're reasonably okay at holding, you know, midfield forwards to low scores. And I think that's something we'll talk a bit about later on in the podcast. But my blind side this week was my middle tier midfield is not quite performing. And I think this is something that a lot of people will probably have had as a similar problem. They didn't do badly, but there were a lot of 70s from players like Abby Dowrick and very popular players like Elise Parker and Claudia Whitford. So what to do about them will be another interesting point of discussion. But more importantly, we have our biggest riser of the week, which was specifically Liam. Liam, how did you go?
I did specifically quite well. So I scored a 1947, so that's a weekly rank of 1165. And that moved my rank up a massive 2,101 spots into 2,519. Now, that does say a lot about where I was ranked going into the week, but we will take a, you know, close to 50% improvement in rank. Good call was trading in Serene the Dream Watson for an elite game against Sydney. Always feels a bit risky trading into someone who's just had a stinky floor score, but I backed in Serene as though she was, you know, she was just going to do her classic, I'm going to score a 30 early in the season, go, oh, that's what I've got to avoid doing for the rest of the year. She bounced back massively with that 90-plus score. My bad call, I also fielded, you know, one of my Richmond forwards in Milsey Yasir. What really killed me, though, was looking at Yasir and Skepper on field with very poor scores, whilst Slocum and a really impressive game from Misha Bowen. It definitely hurt, though, 65 and 55 on the bench when I had a 40 and a, you know, score in the 20s on field. So that was my bad call. My blind side, it is West Coast's ineptitude. I thought this was a far better football side, and they are bottom four in both turnover differential and clanger differential. They can barely hold on to the ball. I think they're down about 5% on time in possession. And again, another team in the bottom four. They can't hold on to the ball. They can't hit targets. And it really has surprised me. And it certainly impacted Ella Roberts, who still had a great score, 104 on the weekend. But it certainly not helped someone like Skepa, who sits deep forward. Oh, I spent a lot of time in the forward line yesterday and certainly didn't perform as hoped.
Yes, absolutely. But someone who has hit a lot of targets this year is Jono. Another massive score this week. Jono, how did you go?
Yeah, I was pretty happy this round. Ended up with the 1,978. So pretty decent bounce back. Put me 499th for the week. And I moved up not quite as far as Liam, unfortunately, but up about 900 ranks to 557th overall, which is only about 100 behind where I was this time last year. So I'm pretty happy with that overall, to be honest.
I saw you'd written in this in the run sheet, and I went and had a look. I'm just tracking 1 week behind what I did last year. After round two, I was 2247, and then it was round three where I had big jump inside the top 500. So I've just been delayed by caring too much about my men's side last week, and I'm now on the charge. Sorry to interrupt your shipping report. I'd done the research on that one, and then I completely forgot to mention it.
Oh, I think it's important because there's still so much season to go, and we know the ranks are flying around. So it's good to know, I suppose, that even though our ranks are quite far from the 100, we're still on track, which is always a helpful thing to keep in mind. Look, my good call this week was a bit of a kerfuffle because my trades were completely thrown out on the Saturday. I had Ebony Marinoff as my VC, and then when she went 149, I had to completely throw my trades out because I needed a red dot, and I ended up having to pivot around and trade out a forward instead. And I had to pick out one of the Richmond forwards to get rid of. And instead of getting rid of Baroldson, I got rid of Sierra Greaves. And I got to say, that was a very, very handy combination. I think that gained me the 30 points plus 100K, so I'll take that. And it also meant that I could reach Aron Fitzpatrick, who is looking phenomenal for the Blues so far. I think she's basically been best on ground in the last two games for the Blues. So excited to have her, and hopefully that can keep my season rolling. In the bad call, I think it was probably Molly O'Hare. I think a good first round, but since then has been pretty disappointing in both games. So, you know, maybe it is the reality of two big wins for Melbourne, but honestly, I think that's going to keep rolling on this season. So maybe not the smash pick I was hoping for, and I may need to get rid of her.
Yeah, another one that I had as well. So probably going to be my priority to trade out either this week or next. But your blind side, Jono, this is going to be an interesting one.
Yeah, the Saints have scored 15 points 2 weeks in a row, which, I mean, last year is what, you know, Jesse Tufiao Wardlaw was doing by herself. So it's kind of a crazy drop-off. And coming up against the Premiers this week, this is going to get really, really ugly. I did not see how bad they were going to be coming.
I just can't believe that I have tweeted about the Saints forward line at one point this year. It was halftime in round one against Carlton. They then went on to have their only good scoring quarter of the entire year after I mozzed them. And then from that point, they have been inept in ways that we could not fathom.
Yeah, yeah, truly shocking.
And this is a team that made the finals last year, which is bizarre, much like West Coast. Just completely gone backwards. And it seems to be something that happens most years in the AFLW. We saw it with Sydney. I think it's fascinating to see which teams do regress like that. Speaking of teams that, didn't actually regress, but stayed pretty much the same, results may vary. Scored an 1845 this week, a weekly rank of 4,821, which put them at 4,975 overall, a movement of 13 places, so pretty much held where they were before. The good call was having Georgi Prasparkas. I will take full credit for that one. And the bad call is forgetting to trade out the players who were missing in Maddie Gay and Violet Patterson.
Yeah, but look, I think they were really well covered by Sarah Verrier herself. And I think, honestly, Verrier has done enough to earn herself a spot in the team all year. She's been phenomenal.
I think so. And I'm so glad that Liam didn't get the chance to trade her out in round one.
Just a thing, that 1845 includes two donuts. Because the coverage on the bench for Patterson and Gay was Maisie Nankervel. And then I honestly can't even remember who the other defender is. And so it was two donuts and still scored an 1845.
Yeah, I mean, you take the average of those two, it was probably going to be the best scoring of the lot of us.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, in order to do that, I did have to trade out of both Richmond players right at the end. There was some funky trades going on. I forgot to do one. Like, it's fine. The team did well in the circumstances, and the circumstances were all my own doing.
Very nice. Well, the watch and wait scoreboard is now up, and I believe it's my turn to do it, so order has been restored. I did this pretty much the entirety of last season, so I assume I will continue to do it for the entirety of this season.
Welcome back.
welcome back, Willow, to the watch and wait scoreboard.
Trade in a risky premium, and then you'll do it for the rest of the year.
Correct. I mean, I'm assuming that I'm going to trade someone in this week that's just going to disappear forever and I'll put them as captain. That's how it usually works. But our top coach is The Lucky Last by Craig M. A impressive score of 2,069 in round three takes Craig's total up to a 5,765 overall. So sitting very pretty on the top. The top weekly score, though, was a incredible score by Blue Lightning 11, Darcy C's team. They have scored a 2,106. It was a high-scoring round, we know that, but this was the highest ever score in AFLW Fantasy. That is incredibly impressive, so well done to Darcy. To keep pace with the top 100, you needed a round score of a 1,946, which is incredibly high once again. And Liam, you've done very well to just pip that by one.
One. I'm making progress. It'll just take me some 300 more rounds to get back there.
Just 300 more rounds to go. Liam is getting there very close, but that's probably why you've jumped up 2,000 rankings nonetheless. Again, a very high scoring round this week, up from a 1779 last round, which was our par for the top 100. And Patrick's team, with the very creative name Team Patrick, is currently sitting in 100th. So well done, Patrick and Team Patrick. They have scored a 1971 this week, and that brings them to a very round 5,600 points overall. So if you have 5,600 points or more, you are sitting in the top 100. So well done. In terms of our free kick league, well, Craig M. is sitting first in our league and overall, so well done once again, Craig. We have 27 listeners in the Free Kick Listener League that are sitting in the top 100, so well done to all of you. And that is four more than last round, so there's a lot of movement going on, and there's plenty knocking on the door as well.
Yeah, I'm keen to see if Craig is going to take some beating, because I think Craig already has an AFLW fantasy hat under their belt. Could take some beating this year.
Don't you mean a fantasy hat on their head? I'm not sure like how you're clipping your hat to your belt, but sure.
Well, we got different approaches. That's fair. That's fine.
Well, I don't know how hats work, so I'm going to leave it to you two. And we are now going to move on to the hot topics. And normally the hot topics, we try to get through them pretty quickly, but this is one that is going to take a little bit of time, and that's because it's one of our big favorite sections. Normally, we call this the Sweet 16, but as you all know, we have an increased squad, and that is quite exciting because it means we now get to rename our Sweet 16 to the 21 Jump Sheet, and I got to say, that is a great name. Well done to the naming committee on that one. So basically, we're going to go through and talk you through who we believe will be the best players on every line from this point onwards and see how we went in terms of our preseason predictions and what we think will actually happen going forward. So I'm going to throw this one to you first, Liam, because Mel did our preseason defenders, but she is not here. So Liam, you can take this one away.
Yes, so in the preseason, our top defenders were Zippy Fish, Maddie Gay, TLR, Maeve Champlin, Tani White, and Serene Watson. And then currently, the top six for average are Zippy Fish, Maddie Gay, Charlie Thomas, Becky Webster, Erica O'Shea, and then Emma O'Driscoll. So those bottom four weren't present in our top six prediction in the preseason.
Very good, very good. Now, in terms of the predicted ones going forward, there's been a little bit of variation in this one. Yeah. But I think we're all pretty set on who's going to be the number one.
Yeah, so the way we're going to do this, just for those who may not have listened before, we all independently go away and do our 21 jump sheet rankings and then collate it and average it out. So this is an amalgamation of the three of our thoughts on who the best defenders will be. So at one, comfortably, number one for all of us, Zippy Fish. At two, we've got Tani White, who was number two for all of us. At three, we have Beck Webster. At four, Serene Watson. At five, Charlie Thomas. And then at six, Tilly Lucas Rod. Now, just missing out is Maeve Champlin. And then also getting votes were Ella Heads and Erica O'Shea.
Very nice. Liam, you have gone for Tilly Lucas Rod a bit higher than the rest of us. You're liking what you've seen from Cam Bernasconi, which is something I say all the time.
I believe that I am notorious. Some would even say famous for saying just that. Just like I'm back in TLR to accumulate in defense for the rest of the year. The track record is there for them. Why turn it away? Like, I think that it would be better if Emily Peace wasn't there playing and taking kick-ins. But given that the two kick-ins I saw from Peace were both turnovers on the weekend, I'm more hopeful than not. I just think that there's enough pedigree there that it would be remiss of us not to have TLR in our top six.
Yeah, I fully agree. I think going to be an absolute star. One thing I was curious about, though, was Charlie Thomas wasn't in your top six at all. I think that ranking has come a little bit higher from Willow and I. And given your comments on West Coast before, I would have thought that Charlie Thomas would be there. I mean, we've seen that the drop-off last year, I think the discussion was that because West Coast were better, the ball just wasn't living in defence as much and Thomas's scores dropped off a little bit. I'm seeing a lot of ball back there, taking a lot of intercept marks, being used quite a bit, and has started the season pretty strongly.
I still think Thomas will be close. But if I'm being honest, I think that the best quarter of football we've seen from Charlie Thomas all year was the fourth quarter of the round one game against JWS, where she was not playing in defence. And then that high score that she had in the weekend, great, I love it. But it was against Adelaide, the best matchup for defenders. And I will say this, was bad. Was not a good ball user. Had far too many kicks where she was, you know, trying to kind of cut underneath it and put it out towards the wing and was missing a lot of them. And I think that part of the reason why I'm not as hot on Thomas from here on out is that I suspect that there will be some changes in the way the ball gets moved. I don't think that what we saw against Adelaide is what Daisy Pierce will want in their ball movement because it was bad. And it's the second week in a row we've seen a bad performance from a high accumulating West Coast defender. Emma Swanson had 100, like a massive score in round two, and was, I was like one of the worst players for West Coast when you consider how much of an impact her bad ball use had.
I think that's fair enough. I do tend to agree that West Coast need to make changes, but I think Charlie Thomas being that co-captain, I really do hope that it'll go well because I have Charlie Thomas and I hope that she continues to do well.
Yeah, I would have thought the change they make is giving better instruction as to how and where she should be kicking it. I mean, the ball's still going to be in her hands because she's one of the people winning it.
I'm just Liam's just giving a shrug. Like, I just don't think that this is sustainable. I think that Pierce will be targeting a better version of West Coast, and if Thomas isn't in the midfield, that better version of West Coast has Thomas scoring 60s.
Potentially so. In terms of consistency that we can bank on, let's move to the midfield now. Jono, this is your domain, and I think the number one in every single line is the same, and I think it's a pretty easy one to guess who that is.
Yep. Yeah, at the start of the season, I made the incredibly bold prediction that Ebony Marinoff would be the number one fantasy player in the midfield, and that has proven true. Going down the list, it hasn't gone as well because second up was Laura Gardner, who has now dropped off quite early this season. Three was Jazz Garner, four was Ash Riddell, five Kiara Bowers, six Charlie Rowbottom, seven Mon Conti, and eight was Georgian Nanscorn. The current ranks aren't too far off that. We still have Marinoff, Bowers, Garner, and Riddell clear ahead of everyone else. I think they're, 120 plus crowd there with Riddell sneaking in by proximity. But the couple new faces that appear in the bottom there, you've got Olivia Purcell next, averaging 110.3, Mon Conti and Charlie Rowbottom, followed up with Maddie Prasparkas, who had one of the best first quarters I've seen in a long time on Sunday night.
Yeah, it was rather impressive. Getting forward, kicking goals, Maddie Prasparkas as well. Our predicted top eight for the midfield, I think a lot of people won't be very surprised by. A lot of it follows these top eight, but there's an interesting omission that we will talk about. But, Jono, run us through those predicted top eight.
Yes, so the collective group has gone with Ebony Marinoff to carry on at number one, Jazz Garner to be our number two from here onwards, Kiara Bowers to slide in at number three with Riddell at number four. We're all predicting Laura Gardner to bounce back at number five, followed up by Liv Purcell, Charlie Rowbottom, and then Georgie Prasparkas to come in at number eight.
Worthwhile mentioning that Bowers and Riddell were identical in their rating. So that kind of gives you a sense if we see Marinoff and Garner clear one and two, then a conjoined Bowers and Riddell when you average out our rankings, and then a bit of a drop down to Gardner.
Yeah, I'm a little bit more keen on Kiara Bowers than you two. I think I had her at number two. And I just think the way Fremantle are playing, it's just perfectly suited to the way Turbo plays from a fantasy perspective. It always has. They get a lot of tackles. They basically don't have a whole lot of other things going on in there for Kiara Bowers. I think Jazz Garner at number two, I'm not going to complain about that because we know how good Jazz Garner is, has been in the top five every single week. And we'll just continue to score about that 120 mark. I don't have any complaints about Garner being number two.
Here's my thinking on Bowers, right? I was negative on her when we did the midfielders episode. I thought the drop-off was coming. You know, she just put up an elite score, had that 146. I do wonder about her time on ground. If you look at what she's averaging this year, it's at 76 versus an 82 that she averaged last year. And I would say this, and if you were watching yesterday, you were certainly concerned. Her scoring is tapering off in fourth quarters. I think that's the one thing I have questions about. I still think it's an elite midfielder, but it's why she's below, in my opinion, Marinoff and then the two North mids.
Yeah. Is the superstar Sarah Verrier stealing the points?
Yes, sure. That's the reason yeah. why.
I would say that the 146 we just saw this week was a little bit confusing because Ash McCarthy went off for much of the second quarter injured. So I think that would have thrown out their rotation, maybe meant that, you know, McCarthy took more in the last, just with fresh legs and everything. But I still think the top four is pretty locked in for me. I think the more interesting one is I'm impressed that we've all decided basically that Gardner's going to bounce back, because that was not one that I thought was going to be universal.
Yeah, I think the thing about Laura Gardner is what we saw at the end of last year, where Laura Gardner just put up scores over 130 like it was nobody's business. And that's, I think we just expect that to happen with Laura Gardner. And it's a bold person to predict that she won't. The one that actually interests me is that none of us have put Moncon in our, up in our rankings, and Moncon's averaging 110 at the moment. Are we worried about Ellie McKenzie's return, or do we just think that that's going to taper off as the season goes on?
Both. That is not an if or. It's both. And I also, again, I don't think that Richmond are playing very well, and something's got to give.
Yeah,
and you can't feed Mon the ball more. Like there's simply nothing more left to feed.
I agree, and there's something that was super interesting was, Jono, you sent me a screenshot of the stats during this game, which was the clearance numbers per player, and it was pretty much, if it wasn't Moncon, they were literally unable to get the ball out of the stoppages. It was Moncon or bust. Ellie McKenzie should hopefully fix that, but as you say, Liam, Moncon really can't be doing a whole lot more at this stage. There's not really much more to go to.
Yeah, I'm interested to see. They made a big switch in their midfield in the second half of that game. I think Izzy Bacon and Mackenzie Ford started taking much bigger minutes. And I'm really curious how that's going to impact in the coming weeks. But we've also got Mackenzie's return. There's a lot of chaos. I just think that if you're not already trying to tag Monconti, you're trying to, you know, apply two players to the tag. Because if you stop her, Richmond are going to fall apart through the middle more so than they already are. And I just really feel like it's going to fall apart very soon.
Yeah, the one other thing that I do want to just quickly talk about is the Tupra Sparkses. We basically were swapping between them at 8 and 9. I think they're both going to go really well. They seem to be the main player in that midfield. I'm going to say, Liam, can you give us an argument for Georgie? And Jono, can you give us an argument for Maddie?
Georgie has a better supporting cast around her to insulate her from the effect of a tag or from attention. And for the majority of the last 18 months, it's been the better goal scorer or the better forward 50 player. Now, that's obviously not been true on the weekend, but I think Georgie has... And I just think that they're in a better side that will find more ways to feed her the ball.
Jono?
I think Maddie Prasparkas is looking the best she has ever looked. The fitness is out of control compared to previous seasons. It's very, very impressive. I think she's the main player. She's taken kickouts. I think she took 7 last round.
Yeah,
which is
all by one.
Yeah, all by one, which is wild for a midfielder. I don't think there's a juicier role that you could hope for as a midfielder.
Yeah, I think that Maddie Gay's absence, which we're still hasn't been confirmed on the timeline, will make this one a really interesting one.
And if Maddie Prasparkas can hold up her fitness, that's a lot of ground to cover. Low 90s time on ground in horrific conditions. I wouldn't be shocked if actually this week is a bit of a down week, because she had one of the best first halves I've seen from any bomber ever in the AFLW. And then her impact kind of waned as we got through the game. And I don't think it's any surprise given how much she had to shoulder and how little time she was able to rest.
I, for one, would be thrilled with a down week from Maddie Prasparkas this week, because she is playing her sister Georgie, so I'm more than okay with that.
Yeah, I think Richmond were throwing a couple different taggers at her throughout the match. Georgia Stubbs ran with her for a bit and Dana East did, which I think explains why Dana East only had the 12 fantasy points. I'm not sure that'll happen every week. I don't think Geelong, they're probably back in their own midfield.
Yeah, I agree. Moving on now, we'll move to the Rucks. This is my domain. I think the top three was pretty easy to start the season, and other than shifting around the order, I think the top three is pretty clear cut. We started the season thinking Matilda Scholes would be the number one, with Mim Strom 2 and Lucy Wales 3. Currently, we have Lucy Wales, who has started the season like a house on fire, averaging 119, has looked sensational. Closely followed by Matilda Scholes, who a lot of people picked with 111 average, and Mim Strom is quite a distant third, which is quite interesting, with an average of 99.7.
Yeah, I think the subtle shift in Wales' role with Depay coming into the team is that she can now sit behind the footy rather than having to try and impact aerially forward. And it just means that her marks are going up every week. It's a very exciting thing to see.
Can we also address the elephant in the room, which is Lucy Wales' opponents in the first 3 weeks?
And, her biggest score has been against her hardest opponent.
She scored how many points when Matilda Schultz got stuck on the bench? She was rucking against Kirsty Lamb for some of those in the game against Port Adelaide. Being elite.
And Kirsty Lamb got the axe because of that, I assume.
Yes, it was your lack of ruck capabilities. But I think they've all been good. What I found fascinating, though, from Mim Strom, I think I only had one mark against Carlton. Mm. And I don't feel like that was a function of the way Carlton were playing. I actually think it was a lot about how, for at least two quarters of that game, Fremantle were looking to try and maintain possession with short kicks, which is not something that we've seen from Fremantle much at all. And that really does limit, A, the number of stoppages, and B, the number of marks Strom takes, because she is very much a down-the-line contest marker.
Yeah, I also think Jess Good had one of her best games. She took a number of contested marks against Mim Strom. I was pretty impressed.
Yeah, that's a fair call.
Yes. Yep. So our predicted top three rucks pretty much follows the order that we have them in currently. Lucy Wales 1, Matilda Scholes 2, and Mim Strom 3. I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of argument there. You could make an argument that Lucy Wales' opponents means she may drop off from here, but I think we're all pretty comfortable with that. So we will move to the forwards now. And this is Liam's domain, and I'm very, very excited for this one because one of the players that is featuring very, very prominently, we had to tease it out of Liam in the preseason, but it has gone very, very well. Liam, talk us through the forwards.
Okay, so my prediction for the top six forwards at the beginning of the season was Michaela Bowen, Bonnie Toogood, Courtney Hodder, Charlie Mullins, Ash Richards, and Iran Fitzpatrick. Now, for those that listened to that forwards episode, you'll remember that I told all the listeners that I had, in the run sheet before the show, refused to put in an F6 because I didn't know who it would be. And then I was told in no uncertain terms that the recording would not start until I ranked someone. So I put in Iran Fitzpatrick at 6 because I'm like, well, I like her and she's under the blanket, so we're going to throw that out there. Well, it turns out I had good reason to like her because she's been incredible because she's currently on average F2. So Michaela Bowen averaging 104. Who cares about three bad quarters against North Melbourne? Why would we ever worry? She's been amazing. And then Ronnie at 2 with an average of 90. And then couple of key forwards in the 80s, Havana Harris, 82.3, Anya McDonough at an 80, and then Jack Dupuy, 71, Lauren Young, 71, is where they're currently looking. In terms of what we're predicting, though, we've got a few different names in there.
I just wanted to put out at this point that we do have a minimum 2 games played if anyone's upset about Maggie Marnie not making the top 6. I think you got to play at least 2 games to make this top 6 rankings.
Yes, and I also think it's fair to note that obviously when we did, as much as, you know, Maddie Gay is in a tough spot when it comes to our rankings because she's now looking like she'll be out for a while, I didn't know that Courtney Hodder would not play any of the first 3 games of the season. Mm. Unsurprisingly.
How could you not know that?
Oh, God. Liam. How could I have predicted it 3 weeks before it happened? Oh, my goodness, I'm slipping. Consensus on F1 and F2. It's Michaela Bowen and Iran Fitzpatrick. And then it started to get a little interesting. We had Charlie Mullins at 3. There was consensus from John and I as well. 4, Havana Harris. 5, Anya McDonough. 6, Tia Charlton. And then first off the list was Bonnie Toogood. Whilst also getting votes, we had Lauren Young, Chloe Malloy, and Jackie Parry.
Yeah, this was probably the most variable, and I think it speaks to how difficult the forwards have been this season so far. I was a big fan of Havana Harris preseason, which you were too, Liam, to be fair. And I'm very happy to see that one.
I didn't start her,
Didn't start her. Charlie Mullins is another interesting one. Probably going to get a bit more midfield time as the season progresses. Has looked good so far, but yeah, Tia Charlton, we saw a much improved performance thanks to a bit of a freedom from a corky, but is that something we expect? I know that you're not super convinced, Jono. So what are your thoughts there?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was a very impressive game from Tia Charlton. I don't want to disagree with that. It's the hesitation that I have is the opponent was West Coast, who are not known for having a particularly strong midfield group. I think sometimes you see these pop scores from players that are developing their game who are clearly very talented. So the example I was using before the podcast started, we were talking about Laura Stone and the effort she put up last week against Port Adelaide before sort of returning to type, I guess, because they're still developing that consistency in their game. That's the main thing that worries me about Tia Charlton. I'm just not sold as of yet.
But can I say this? We were all convinced in the preseason that she was a capable. We know that she's a 70 scorer, and she's getting more CBAs now than she was then. And she looked great in the practice match. The only thing that's different in rounds one and two was a horrific cork, like a luminescent blue corky all the way down her quad, and then all of a sudden there's no strapping tape against West Coast, who are a middling midfield matchup, scoring-wise, and she goes great. What's there not to love?
Well, I'm not to say that she's not going to be a good pick from here. She's priced at, what, the low 60s? I think she will go into the 70s. I just think that there are, if we're talking about our top six predictions from here, I think there's six players who are going to go over 75.
I think that's bold, given we know that high-tackling players are the ones who benefit as the season goes along and people get more tired. There's less explosion out of stoppage. That's part of the reason why I think I'm backing in Tia Charlton to be a top six. I had her ranked at five, above two key forwards in Bonnie and Anya McDonough at 6 and 7.
Yeah, Jono and I have both put McDonough in there. She's looked very, very good to start the season. I think, yeah, the key forwards has been so fascinating because we've got a lot of them floating around that bottom end of our rankings. As Liam's already mentioned, Bonnie Toogood has looked good without being great from a fantasy perspective so far. Jackie Parry has had some incredible games after a reasonably poor game against North Melbourne round one. Chloe Malloy's one that's sort of flown a bit under the radar after a poor round two. There's been a few players that have just had two good games and maybe one bad game. It makes it a bit harder to predict these forwards. But one I do want to talk about that Jono has listed as their potential F7 was a rookie that we know wasn't really a rookie, and that's Lauren Young.
Yeah, I thought she was absolutely incredible on the weekend. Obviously kicking the match winner, but also one of the most dominant players on the ground in the first quarter, the first half, really. So I think this is the potential that we've seen from Lauren Young. And I think they're only going to grow in importance as the season goes on. We've obviously seen Indy Tahoe go down. At the time of recording, we don't know exactly what she's done, but it looks pretty ACL-ish. So I think we know. It's definitely going to be an interesting switch up, that Port Adelaide forward line. Do they just bring in Julia Teakle and keep all the roles the same? Does Piper Window sort of step up into a more prominent role? I'm not quite sure how that's going to happen. But what I know is that Lauren Young is going to be a big part of it. I think they're going to be looking for her as often as they can, because with that sort of talent, that's going to be a great avenue towards goal for them.
I absolutely agree. And it's a good segue into our next hot topic, which is our trade strategies at this point in the season. We are a quarter of the way into the season, and Liam has posed a very, very fascinating question, which is, are we currently at the start of upgrade season? Have we reached upgrade season? I think we are starting to think yes, but the way you do that is probably the most interesting thing, because we've got players like Lauren Young who you probably don't need to upgrade because she was a rookie and no longer is, because she's just scoring really, really well. But there are other players that you probably need to start thinking about moving on, such as certain Richmond forwards. How are you two thinking about this? What is your upgrade season strategies at the start? We'll start with you, Liam.
Well, I think that it's starting to get to the stage where, as you said, it's a divergent strategy on upgrade season. You are taking underperforming or stagnating rookies either on your bench or the last spot in each of your major lines and upgrading them to a potentially value bottom of end of the, you know, the 21 jump sheet kind of option. Or you're taking one of your stagnating mid-price midfielders, particularly up to an Uber premium. So I think that the question now is, I don't think that there's any singularly correct approach. Generally, I have been taking the strategy of trying to punt the forwards as much as possible. I think the scoring in the forward line has been exceptionally inconsistent. I already have the F1. And then if you, outside of Iran Fitzpatrick, a lot of the other forwards would struggle to get inside the top six in defence. So, and most of us were already running a lot of rookies in the forward line over above every other line. So I've been taking that as a bit of a general strategy. But this week with Skepa and Yasir both losing role and scoring poorly, I may look to try and upgrade one of them. But also in the forward line, I would say that there aren't that many cheaper options if you already own Tia Charlton and you were wise enough to hold on to her so that you could get this truly elite score that she got on the weekend. And I'm sure everyone on this podcast recording tonight is the same. I don't think that there's a one approach you can take. Who you should be upgrading? Is it Elise Parker? Is it Claudia Whitford? Or is it one of your worst? Is it, you know, Molly O'Hare or Keely Skepa? But it's now maybe predicting about 2 weeks in advance, having a look at like, well, let's map out what the next 2 weeks might look like trades wise. Is there one good matchup coming up next week where you suffer through maybe a poorer one this week? Or is there a really tough one next week? So you need to make sure that you're trading out of that kind of player. So there is no one answer, but it is certainly the time of year where it starts to get very difficult to decide. I agree.
Definitely.
Yeah. I think it seems common parlance in the fantasy world at the moment to say just punt the forwards, you don't have to worry about it. I really don't subscribe to it in the same way. I feel like I understand where it comes from because the forwards are so incredibly inconsistent. But I don't think it's... I think the main part to focus on is the reliability of the target you're getting in. Because I think that's the key part of this. So I see a lot of teams where their defenders are actually pretty solid. But they've maybe got, say, a Chantel Emmonson or something like that, and they're hearing this, you know, do I need to just punt forwards and get the top defenders? You hold on to an Emmonson if they're doing well. If you've got a Yasir, a Skepa, and a Greaves on field, you know, I think there are just easier ways to think about this because you got to think, am I getting out, you know, someone who's putting up a 30? That's going to help you far more than anything else.
I think that's absolutely correct. And I think it's more a case of the volume of options that I feel are there in defense. So I think that Serene Watson is a great target for those who are running with a questionably scoring D6, given that her price starts in the 600K range. If you are in need of a forward, I think that Charlie Mullins and Tia Charlton are both great options to target. So it is, well, I've got to try and align myself with the options that I have available. It's not, yeah, it's not I've got to punt forwards. It's like, it's a factor that I'm considering. And it's not punt, it's more comparing it to the competition. There are more bad scorers in people's forward lines, such that it is not as pressing a requirement.
Yeah. I feel like there's a stat we need to start tracking, which is specifically for forwards. And it's the AWN. It's the average without North Melbourne. Because if you look at a lot of players like Charlie Mullins or Jackie Parry, and you just take out the North Melbourne game, they're averaging either 70 or 80. It's a far more reliable indicator for people who are just not going to score well against them, but don't have to until the finals. So we don't have to worry about that anymore. I'd say targets like that are great to bring in. I wouldn't be targeting your key forwards that are really highly priced, though. So, and Anya McDonough, as great as she is, I think that's a finish your team option. It's not an upgrade midway through the season option.
I think that's fair. I think, as you say, there's so many different ways that you can do this. And I think that one of the things that's quite interesting is which players we think are going to keep scoring well. And that's a good way we can transition towards our next hot topic, which is our regular Believe It or Not section. We'll start with the defenders, and the hot topic here is Serene Watson. The 91, it was a really, really good call to bring her in this week. Liam, the question here is, are we worried about the North Melbourne matchup?
A little bit, but less than almost every other line. Didn't have an amazing score against North last year when they were battered. And Serene's worst game of the year so far has come when St Kilda were battered. Much worse than on the weekend. What I'm finding very interesting, though, is seeing Nick Del Santo try and concoct some situations to have Serene be the loose behind the ball in the second half. And for a lot of the time after the first quarter last week, Serene was starting on a wing and then dropping behind the ball. And it was Julie O'Sullivan who was kind of trying to do the same thing, going back the other way. And it kind of worked. Like, Serene had one of her best games, but a lot of that was actually built off her pressure once the ball was inside 50. But I think that she's a great target. The player I want to kind of go, believe it or not, is the 56% time on ground for Maeve Chaplin. That is a number to be watching. She's 747 gay. If she also starts to hit the 600K range, I think she becomes a target. She still scored solidly enough. I think she scored a 61 in that 56% time on ground. I am just waiting for the week to launch as she gets cheaper.
Yeah, I think that's really fair. We know how good a scorer Maeve Chaplin is. Someone that was on that cusp of our 21 jump sheet, as we said, as well. We'll move into the midfield, and a couple of the players that we did also discuss about in terms of our 21 jump sheet, Laura Gardner, just a 95. Not terrible, but for a player that was the highest averaging scorer last year, I mean, we all predicted that she's going to go back to scoring well enough to be in our top five, but is this maybe more a sign of things to come?
I don't know what's going on with Laura Gardner, but something's up. Time on ground was up again massively, 95%. I don't think she went to the bench until the fourth quarter, but was mainly playing off half forward. I do wonder what the vision is there for the Swans. She still scored well, considering, and I thought she was extremely impactful. Her work kind of at post-centre bounce clearances was vital to Sydney's victory. And I think she kicked the goals. Yeah, she kicked the goals well. Still had 23 touches, still had 8 tackles. But I don't know if that 115, 120 score is going to start to be consistent until she's back, maybe even just two-thirds of the time in the midfield. What's causing that time at centre bounce to be so low, I really don't know.
Yeah. I think with the break-even still at 121, I think we can still wait and see and just hope the price drops a little bit further so that these mid-prices we were talking about just get a little bit closer.
Yeah, I agree with that. Another premium option who has fallen away from the scoring, talked a little bit about West Coast game plan, Ella Roberts, scored 104. So for the people that did hold on to her, back to good scoring, but I wonder if those like really big scores are possibly beyond her from a fantasy perspective this year because of how West Coast are playing. Jono, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I think it's interesting that none of us put her in the best, you know, 8 players in the midfield. I think that she's not going to be bad. I think teams are going to... Not every team has followed suit in what Grace Cost did in that first round. So I do think that she's going to be able to put up scores again. She's now getting pretty cheap. So 860K, you know, you're looking at an option like a lot of people started Claudia Whitfitt or an Ash Woodland. I think those are options that it's, you know, less than 50K to jump to an Ella Roberts. To be honest, it's a little tempting for me.
Yeah, I think that's understandable. I think it's just one of those things where, as we say, like, I'm not sure if you're expecting those massive scores, probably not, but at the price she's at now, it's very tempting. A few other players didn't quite do as well as they have in previous weeks / seasons. We saw 56 from both Ash McCarthy, as we said, off for a lot of the game. And also from T. Smith, who had been one of the few shining lights for St Kilda this year. Are those two players that we need to be worried about? Much lower owned than the other two, but potentially impactful for other players that are relevant too.
Yeah, I think these are players that I'm probably just looking at going, they're much better than what they're going to be priced at next week. Particularly Ty Smith, who's coming into North and, you know, is probably going to put up a sub 80 score yet again. I think next week we're probably looking at, you know, maybe a handoff to an Ash McCarthy, who otherwise had gone, what, 97 and 100? So pretty reliable scorer there. I think that could be an easy stepping stone.
I'm also keen on, if we're talking Fremantle, you know, we've already talked a little bit about Kiara Bowers, but she's great, you know, and the run is good upcoming for Fremantle. But Gabby Newton, scoring a 114, definitely looked like she could be a beneficiary if this kick mark game plan, even if it's only happening for a half when they're playing into the wind, I still think it could be very fruitful. Before, it usually takes her until about round 6 or 7 when Fremantle go full Uber tackle mode for prime Gabby Newton to appear. If that's marks into then higher tackling season, I am actively targeting Newton in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, very fascinating. I think there's one other one we need to talk about. Briefly talked about a Sydney player already, but that is Emma Janaja, who scored a 72, looked on track for an even bigger score, has a break-even of 3 this week. Is she a must-have rookie, even if we're not seeing consistent 72s?
I would say she's the best target we have this week. I thought she looked very, very good in that Sydney game. Was a replacement player coming across from Box Hill. And to be honest, the VFLW scores are not great. I think the 72 that she's had in the AFLW beat every score she's ever had in the AFLW from a fantasy perspective. So I wouldn't be bringing her in and putting her on field. But that break even, and with the lack of rookies that we have coming through at the moment, I think Janaja is the easiest target.
Yeah, I think it will. What will be fascinating, though, is that for a lot of people who have Chloe Bown and Sonny Lappin, who look like they might start to become trade outs, if you're trading in Emma Janaja, if you're going Lappin down, it really limits your upgrade capacity. If you're able to hold on to Lappin and go Bound down field, possibly another rookie, or you're looking to upgrade Bound to a premium at M7 or M8, then you might have a few more upgrade options. So it's that elevated price, that 315K, if you're otherwise going down to a 200K option, you are going to be severely impacting who you can upgrade to.
Yeah, I think that's really fair. But as you say, we don't have a huge amount of targets that we can go to, so not a bad option if you are looking for a downgrade. We're going to briefly touch on the rucks because this is one that we mentioned last week. Darcy Davies has put up another 90. Is this someone that we should be targeting? I don't really know how, because most people would probably have one of those big three. But, I mean, a trade of Darcy to Strom would get you a fair bit of money.
No, don't. Like, Darcy Davies had a great game, but Piper Dunlop is injured for the second half. Like, rucking against Ashley Maloney, it's not. No, don't. Like, Geelong were already an easy ruck matchup, and then they lost their only named ruck. Like, don't do it.
Yeah, I would say that Darcy Davies is only playing about half the time in the ruck and the other half of the time off half back. I think it was like a 57-43 split in the ruck with Paige Price. It's a very interesting role. I don't see a world where we can do it, but I really, really wish that she'd been fit to start the season, because when she was listed on the injury list as, like, what, 1 to 3 weeks and then played anyway, it made her impossible to start at R2, but would have been so handy.
Well, the good news is she does have a very easy matchup this week against Fremantle for rucks. So, wonderful stuff. Moving on to the forward line. As you've said, the forward line is such an interesting area at the moment. We've talked a lot about Tia Charlton. We've talked a lot about Aaron Fitzpatrick, both going really, really well. But there's some other premium players who have underperformed a bit in recent weeks, one of them being Ash Richards. Liam, you love St Kilda.
Notoriously.
Ash Richards, what is happening there? And is that a player that maybe we target later in the season, or are we just expecting 50s from here on in?
I am not expecting 50s from here on in. We know that the floor goes lower. But more importantly, I think the ceiling goes higher. There was a bit of an uptick in the CBAs again this week, giving hope to anyone who owns and held and is suffering. Now, the time on ground is still bad. I think the second quarter she might have had like 39% time on ground. I do wonder if she's carrying something. You're not trading in this week because they have North Melbourne. And that is going to stink for Richards. She's going to be super, super cheap though. And then I think in the next fortnight, she becomes a target for your F6 if that role improves.
Very, very nice. I think that's a good analysis there. Another one that we all thought was going to improve is Charlie Mullins. We put her at number 3 in our 21 jump sheet. 270s and a lower score so far. What do we think about Charlie Mullins? I know is a popular target to trade in this week.
I mean, I would say the average without North is pretty good. You know, we're looking at an average over 70. I think she's going to be very reliable. At the price as well, I think she's also, thanks to that North game, under 700K. I don't think we're going to see that for the rest of the season, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that's the main one for me. If there's a lot of players that probably need to go in that forward line, and I'll mention them shortly, but Mullins is one of those players, like probably Serene Watson last week slash this week, where you're possibly not going to get them any cheaper. It's not a bad time to jump on board. But the players to trade to Charlie Mullins, there's a few rookie players who started the season really, really well and have very much underperformed and hurt a lot of coaches who have played them on field, namely Amelia Yassir and Keely Skepa. Both of them have put in pretty dreadful scores in the last 2 weeks and have not just halted their cash generation, started to go a bit backwards, which has quite hurt a bit considering how well they played in the first season. And the other one is Sierra Greaves, who looked quite good in the midfield, albeit against Collingwood early on, and has basically ended up as a half forward against Essendon, and it worked a lot better for them. So what do we do with these players? What do you think? Are they going to improve? If you have them, do you have to get rid of them?
I think you want to get rid of some of them. I don't think you want to be trading out of all of them. My big question for the week, and I presume it will be a conundrum for a lot of coaches, is who is the more important player to trade out? You might be trading out of one or two of Skepa, Greaves, and Yassir. It does come down a little bit to the break-even game, and again, who your upgrades are going to be able to be. I wonder if for the Richmond duo, it's going to come down a little bit to team sheets, in my opinion. I do think the matchup, though, could be quite good if it's a Fremantle team that are looking to play some tackle football. I think that'll be hopefully good for Yassir. The big one, though, is Skepa, who has the best pedigree for scoring, but also the toughest matchup playing up against Naam. If, Will, I'll put this question to you, given you've done the question asking all night. You have to trade out one of the three of Greaves, Skepa, and Yassir. Who are you trading?
I'm going to start this by saying I'm this week literally planning on trading out two of them.
Which two then?
To me, the two that I am trading out are Greaves and Yassir. I think that the Richmond, those two have lost their spot in that midfield, and the scoring has vastly dried up, and such has the cash generation. Both of them lost money this week. I'm using them as a stepping stone to get to Charlie Mullins. I think, as you say, Skepa, it was dreadful this week, but the potential is the best for Skepa. I mean, if you've got all three of them, that's bad luck because you probably need to trade all of them. But to me, Yassir is probably the one that I think needs to be traded the most. I think in a pinch, you could probably hold on to Sierra Greaves because you're unlikely to get a dreadful score from Sierra Greaves, but they're still probably going to bleed your money and score another 40 to 50, which isn't really what you want.
I think the break even for both Yassir and Greaves is pretty similar. So I think you're going to be losing a lot of cash either way. I'd probably get rid of Yassir first, to be honest, unless of course it makes the difference in your upgrade. If it makes the difference in your upgrade, I would prioritize that.
Fair enough. I think that is a good place to leave it. We'll now move to the captain's corner. And, I mean, you've nailed it once again last week, Liam. 149 for Ebony Marinoff. I wonder who you're going to have as the number one this week.
Well, that's a good question. it's Ebony Marinoff. And
what?
I know. And this is only noteworthy to discuss because, Jono, you and I were talking about it at the football on Sunday. Tackles against Hawthorn, it is a fruitful place to be. No team plays, averages more combined tackles between them and their opponent than Hawthorn. And then also in the top three is Adelaide. So that should give you a sense of where the queen of tackling will be dominating. I think this is a comfortable C score. The question will be if you're going to consider, you know, a VC and using it. I think Jazz Garner, Ash Riddell both will score well this week. I think Kiara Bowles will score solidly. I think Georgie Prasparkas, further to what we were saying earlier, after we saw what Moncon did against Essendon, I think that could be a massive score. I think all of the rucks are going to score well again this week. And then Charlie Rowbottom up against Port Adelaide. Charlie Rowbottom has looked more adept in the faster moving balls, ball speed conditions of 2026 than she did in 2025. So I think that she's in for another solid score.
I think that all sounds very, very good. But once again, just stick the C on Noffy. It's a pretty easy thing to do. Moving on, we will look into some listener questions now. And, I mean, there's been a lot of questions about Keely Skepper. I think, as we've said, the potential's still there. But if you don't have other issues, trade her out.
Willow, Skepper, you're going, well, to both of you, if you have Skepper and you're going up, is it to Mullins or is it to Charlton?
I'd be going to Mullins, personally. Yeah. I am doing that quite literally, just not from Skepper, so.
Yeah. I'd be going Mullins first as well.
We have a question here from Brattle's Fantasy. Hey, Legends, once again, question for specifically anyone except Liam, which I'm going to throw to Jono. Do you think Liam was more disappointed by the Bombers losing at the Death, not being able to trade out Verrier for the second week in a row, or forgetting to do the third trade in the free kick side? Jono, what do you reckon?
I'd say it was probably the Bombers losing at the Death. You know, I think when he was forgetting to do the trades and not trading out Ferrier, there was a smile on his face, but there was absolutely none during the Bombers game. So that last quarter was pretty entertaining from a non-Bombers watching perspective.
And if you are following along and looking at the trades that the free kick team has done, results may vary, you will see that the trades had to involve Richmond and Essendon players because I had forgotten to do them until 6 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. And then I saw that for whatever reason, I'd put Tia Charlton on the bench last week with an E, and otherwise I was not going to be able to take it. So in came Sophie Strong, with a 200K red dot forward to be able to take it. Followed by the only upgrade I could do in the midfield from Sierra Greaves, which was to Amy Gaylor. I think it was about 40K short of Maddie. Oh, no. I can't remember but I was agonizingly short of Maggie Prasparkas, and there was no way of making the cash work. I couldn't do a third trade. I didn't have enough Essendon or Richmond players.
Very good. I think the most disappointing thing for Liam has actually been the plight of St Kilda. Moving on
I'm disappointed, yes, but it's not been disappointing.
Moving on to a question from Michael Tassone. Thoughts on trading Woodland to Fitzpatrick, which is a movement from a midfielder to a forward. We've also got a Mullins or Fitzpatrick question from Ando 6767. I think that one, I'll start there, which is, I think Mullins and Fitzpatrick are different targets for different needs with your team, depending on your price point. Would you agree?
Yes. Yeah, I would say that Mullins is the better target just because they're going to be underpriced. Fitzpatrick is quite expensive. We're looking at a difference of about 200,000 here. So I would, obviously Fitzpatrick is going to average more, but I think Mullins is the better target this week. Save the cash and find, you know, a better target going forward with that money. The first question, though, from Michael is very interesting to me because I'm looking at doing something similar, but I think my team is in a very unique position to be able to do it. As a general rule, I do not advise trading out midfielders to other lines because it is so hard to be able to afford these expensive midfield premiums. And if you're trying to go from a rookie up, it's going to take you a lot of, you know, good rookie cash generation on the bench. So I think if you're in a position where you've got a Chloe Bound on field already and you're looking at taking Woodland down, that to me would put your team in a very precarious situation where you may never be able to afford that last midfielder. If your team is in the position where mine is, where I've currently got eight premium, I think my cheapest midfield premium is Ailey Runnels, I'm happy to take one of them down because I think that'll just kind of put me where everyone else is and help me out on the other lines. So I wouldn't put yourself in a position where you're playing two midfield rookies without a lot of consideration about the advantage it's giving you on the other side.
And in terms of going sideways from Woodland to a Ron Fitzpatrick, I think that I just don't see it as value. I don't see there's being enough value to justify the trade. I think it would be quite unsurprising if Woodland from this point out averaged more than a Ron Fitzpatrick, even if a Ron was F2 for the rest of the year. So I wouldn't be doing it for that reason. And also I would not be doing Ron Fitzpatrick knowing that next week is North Melbourne. If you've got Claudia Whitfitt, maybe you start to ask some questions about going sideways to a forward, but because you're just trading North Melbourne game next week to a North Melbourne game next week. But yeah, I don't like going sideways from Woodland. I don't like going sideways from Parker. I don't like going sideways from Dowrick. I don't like going sideways from Ella. I don't want to go sideways to a forward. I think that there are few sideways options in that midfield that I like going to. I think that it's the Georgie Prasparkas, Maddie Prasparkas, Gabby Newton, Olivia Purcells of the world that I would be upgrading those stagnating midfielders to.
I think that's very fair enough. The next question from James Matthews, and this is an interesting one because I don't think it just applies to Ava Usher, who's the player they've asked about, but is it too early to trade out Ava Usher? There's a few other rookies that are still going reasonably well, like Chloe Bound. Is it too early to trade out Ava Usher? Is it too early to trade out Chloe Bound? Who are the rookies that you probably need to keep is probably the question here.
I think you're keeping Jordy Allen. That's it.
The Melbourne one?
Yeah, Jordy Allen Jr. And outside of that, I think you can start to make the case for trading out most every rookie. Maybe you want to leave Yasmin Janček to keep generating cash. Congratulations. I envy you. But outside of that, yeah, I think we're getting to the stage where you can justify a lot of rookie tradeouts, particularly if it's Usher, you want to bring in Janaeja, and you can still get to an Uber premium. You can clip into Kiara Bowers. You can bring in someone you expect to go 105 plus, then I think it's absolutely okay to be trading out of the rookies that have made, at this point, you know, nearly 300K.
I think that sounds fair enough. Speaking of trades, it is time to go through our trade plans going forward. And I will start with you, Jono. What are your trade plans for this week?
Well, I'm very thankful that Liam called out specifically Claudia Whitfitt might be okay to trade because that is currently the player that I'm looking at moving out of my midfield. Going to be taking Whitfitt down to Janaeja. And then I'm going to be making upgrades to Molly O'Hare in my back line to Serene Watson and Amelia Yassir to Charlie Mullins in my forward line. So I think to me I'm doing it's not just one down, one up. It's one down, two up, which is I suppose why I feel happy with it, but I'm still thinking about it. If there's a way that I could do it without trading Claudia Whitfitt, I would be very happy.
My one question there is, does the matchup against Collingwood tempt you to hold Whitfitt for another week?
It does a little bit, but at the same time, I feel like Claudia Whitfitt, I worry about the time on ground, you know, and with the North matchup coming up, I just really don't expect a pop score from Whitfitt. So I'm just sort of, I'm not sure what I'm looking for aside from risking a floor score. So, yeah, not not too discouraged at the moment because of the matchup.
No, no, fair enough. Liam, what are your trade plans?
Currently, I am doing Chloe Baum down to Janaeja, holding on to Sonny Lapin, going Mills Yasir to a name that we have not mentioned whatsoever, and this is a very speculative trade, but it's Aisling Maloney. I don't know if anyone's had a look at the Geelong forwards run, but she's only 540-odd K, which is well below what we know Lingi Maloney can do. And I'm going Whitford as well out with the North Melbourne matchup incoming in mind, up to Gabby Newton.
So you've picked Geelong's ruck.
Oh, I've picked Geelong's ruck. Oh no! Oh, I'm so disappointed with that. A Geelong ruck who can kick goals. Oh, what a horrific idea.
Very good. I need to get rid of two Richmond players. So I need to get rid of Sierra Greaves and Amelia Yasir. I have gone for Charlie Mullins. I am a big fan of Charlie Mullins. And I've also decided to pick my favourite player in the league in Chloe Shear, who has come off a good match against the Gold Coast with a 66. And comes up against a team who really struggled to contain opposition key forwards. Which team would that be, Liam?
I can't remember. I wasn't listening.
Fair enough. So that's basically what I'm doing. And I'm also going to pick up Emma Janaeja just because I can. And it seemed like a good idea. So that's my plans. Any last words from you two?
If you are looking for other rookies to bring in, make sure you check in on the AFLW Fantasy Download article this week, because there will be more rookies discussed than just Janaeja, who, as it turns out, was the only one we talked about for the entire episode. But there will be some options in there for you. I would say that there are actually some solid-looking options in defence. I thought Egan looked all right from Fremantle. She was someone that I had traded in.
Liam, you gotta leave them something. We're working on our marketing here. We're giving them a taste, and go read the article. That's the point here.
Yeah, okay, there you go. You get one name. Yeah, Holly Egan.
One name. Holly Egan. If you want to know who else Liam thinks you should be picking if you're looking for rookies, read that article when it comes out. Obviously, we've got our 21 jump sheet, which we're very excited by. That will also be out later this week on the socials. So keep an eye out for that one, which we can be your guide for the rest of the season. We sure hope it will be. And you can also join our Free Kick Listener League. It is, once again, it is not too late, and I love throwing to Liam to give out this number. Liam, what is the code to enter the league?
RSG4QUJL. RSG4QUJL.
Wonderful. You should know that off by heart by now, which is fantastic. Thank you so much for listening. I hope your trade plans are going very, very well. Ours often aren't, but that's okay. Going forward, we have heaps more content coming out, as we've said, so keep your eyes on the social feeds and read the articles. They are so, so informative. I've been your host, Willow. I've been joined by Jono and Liam. Thank you so much, and we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
See you, everyone.